one. It may be met in the near future. Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, has said the same.
Despite Orbán's breach of international law, European governments have remained silent. As a result, observers believe that this is just the first of several upcoming trips to EU member states. Germany's next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has already signaled his intention to invite Netanyahu and refuses to commit his country to enforce the ICC arrest warrant. Dieter Reinisch, Budapest.
We are here to denounce the ongoing massacres in Gaza and the Israeli incursion in Dara. The people resisted bravely, sacrificing martyrs in the fight against occupation. We stand with them and will never accept Israeli control over our land.
As Israeli airstrikes on Syria escalate, the response from the international community remains absent. In Dara, however, the people have taken matters into their own hands. The popular resistance in southern Syria has proven that armed struggle remains the only way to confront Israeli expansion.
We stand with our brothers in Dara, just as we stand with Gaza. Resistance will never be defeated. Just as Gaza's fighters remain strong, so too will the resistance in Syria. Syrians and Palestinians are united, and together we will defeat Israeli occupation.
Beyond the battlefield, many protesters also blamed Arab regimes for their complicity in Israel's crimes. Calls for accountability rang out against Arab leaders, accusing them of betraying the Palestinian cause and enabling Israeli aggression in the region.
The Israeli occupation will fall. It's only a matter of time, but those who betrayed Gaza and Dara like Jordan, Egypt, the UAE, and others must be held accountable. Their complicity is a crime. And no matter what they do, the people will triumph.
With every act of Israeli aggression, the spirit of resistance grows stronger. Today's protests in Damascus and other Syrian cities are yet another testament to the unwavering determination of Syrians and Palestinians to defeat Israel. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
In Al-Katiba area in northwestern Khan Yunis, which is included within the so-called safe zone and not far from the infamous Al-Mawasi area, last night the families inside this neighborhood were sleeping and suddenly a massive explosion happened that shook the entire neighborhood. This home, which belongs to Al-Aggad family, was targeted last night, killing the entire family inside this house. Father, the mother, and the three little children. But not only that, because of the devastating and massive scale of the bombardment, two of the neighbors as well were killed within this airstrike that was carried by the Israeli occupation.
You can see how closely the homes are built here. We were jolted awake by a thunderous blast, only to find the remains of neighbors scattered across the streets. Our neighborhood has already borne the brunt of Israel's aggression, and now, despite being labeled as a safe zone and instructed to be sought refuge here, we are still enduring relentless bombardment.
The families could collect the remains of the family and the neighbors due to this brutal attack that literally turned the family inside this home into pieces. The neighbors are still cleaning the rubble, looking for any of the remains of the family that was killed here.
The attack was so intense that we thought our home had been bombed, but it was our neighbors. We are still clearing the rubble, searching for more remains of the children who were killed alongside their parents here. These innocent people did nothing to deserve such a brutal end. We call on everyone in the world to put an end to this genocide.
This is the situation inside the so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now directing the families in southern Khan Yunis and Rafah to come to. More massacres and more killing is awaiting the families here who are still subjected to this massive campaign by the occupation that doesn't seem to go any easier on the families here. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
goes up must come down. A fitting theme for Yemen's military operations in support of Palestine. The armed forces of Yemen have downed yet another U.S. MQ-9 Reaper drone, an unmanned combat aerial vehicle capable of remotely control.
The Yemeni army's air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al-Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second drone being shot down in 72 hours and the 17th one during the operations in support of Gaza.
Yemen began its pro-Gaza operations in November 2023. Experts say the growing number of American drones being shot down by Yemen not only reflects tactical success, but signals a significant leap in the country's military capability.
The U.S. is very upset with what they have suffered in the Red Sea and Arabian Sea as Yemen continues to attack them. Moreover, Yemen will continue to advance militarily. Yemen is not satisfied with only shooting down 17 U.S. drones. In the near future, there will be more surprises that will benefit the people and armed forces of Yemen.
Amid the successful Yemeni operations, U.S. President Donald Trump has claimed that the country conducts its attacks with Iran's support, an allegation strongly denied by the Yemenis.
We will continue to support the people of Palestine. Our military success came from the preparation of our armed and air defense forces, and we will continue to counter this American aggression on our nation. We will continue to support Palestine. Iran is an ally of Yemen. However, they have no say whatsoever with regards to our wars and our military, defending our land from this U.S. aggression.
The United States launched intense airstrikes on Yemen last month after the Arab country resumed its maritime military operations in support of Palestinians in war-ravaged Gaza. The Yemeni armed forces have shot down more U.S. drones, demonstrating their growing capability to counter advanced aerial threats and sending a clear message of defiance amid ongoing aggression against their country. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
On Wednesday, a number of Italian lawmakers pressured Italy's foreign minister Antonio Tajani to finally express words of condemnation for the Israeli regime and Benjamin Netanyahu after 18 months of relentless slaughter in Gaza. Tajani answered questions on Israel's genocidal acts in the Palestine during a question time in the Senate. His words were far from condemnation for Netanyahu's heinous crimes.
Our government's position is clear. Conditions for a political dialogue must be created in order to achieve a two-state solution, but without Hamas. I will reiterate this at tomorrow's EU summit of foreign ministers.
I'm flabbergasted. Once again, you haven't been able to express a single word of condemnation for Israel's onslaught of more than 50,000 people in Gaza, many of whom are children. Gaza is razed to the ground. Minister, you haven't been able to say a single word on the one responsible for this massacre, war criminal Netanyahu.
Italy's support to Israel's genocidal operations in Gaza has been so far unconditional. In January, the Italian government told Israeli officials that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would not be arrested under an ICC warrant were he to visit the country. War criminal Netanyahu is slated to pay an official visit to Hungary this week following an invitation from Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán. Some Italian lawmakers have said Hungary should deny entry to Netanyahu or arrest him if he sets foot in the country.
Netanyahu's visit to Hungary is one of the many legs of the Israeli government's macabre tour of Europe. We deem Netanyahu and his government partners bloodthirsty war criminals, and unfortunately, the international community and most Western governments have failed to provide any opposition to Israel at all. We must strongly oppose the Israeli genocide by imposing sanctions on Netanyahu's government, including suspending Israel-EU association agreement.
Former EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs Josep Borrell has often insisted on convening a summit with Israel to discuss violations of human rights obligations under the EU-Israel association agreement. However, Borrell's successor, Kaya Kallas, has so far been much more obliging towards the regime than her predecessor, Max Civili, Rome.
The Gaza Strip is facing a severe humanitarian crisis as Israeli blockade, now exceeding a month, continues to prevent the entry of essential aid, including food, fuel, and medical supplies.
The Gaza Strip is going through the most dire circumstances ever. The famine is back again, even more severely, as 25 bakeries stop completely. This current crisis is unprecedented, as this is the longest time span of closure of the Gazan crossings by the Israeli regime. This in turn has caused the shortage of flour and fuel needed for the bakeries to operate.
The United Nations World Food Programme reported that all bakeries in Gaza have ceased operations due to the acute shortages of flour and fuel. The WFP emphasized that bread, often the only accessible food for many families, is becoming unattainable, warning that famine is a serious risk looming for the Gazan population.
All the bakeries closed today because of the continuing closure of crossings. All what was stored in our warehouses by the WFP have been consumed completely. So here we are now, without any ingredients there is no way we can work. We used to consume 250 to 300 tons of flour daily, which was less than the actual amount needed for the population. Now there is no choice for us.
The dire humanitarian crisis is further exacerbated by the continuous Israeli military aggression that not only claims the lives of thousands, but also makes survival for 2.2 million Gazans a struggle.
As the blockade endures, the people of Gaza continue to face an increasingly desperate struggle for survival, with starvation looming as a significant threat besides the continuous Israeli aggressive attacks. Ghad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Rabbi English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to Rabbi English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Rabbi English Radio.
The Supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions, the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, protesters throughout the U.S. and Europe have voiced a strong opposition to just about every move that Donald Trump has made since assuming the Oval Office for his second term as U.S. president. Now, in the U.S., demonstrators push back at the Trump administration's moves to fire thousands of federal workers, close Social Security Administration field offices, effectively shutter entire agencies, deport immigrants, scale back protections for people of color, and cut federal funding for health programs. And throughout the world, and especially Europe, protesters are in the streets taking part in hundreds of demonstrations dubbed the hands-off movement. Hands-off the UK, hands-off Gaza, hands-off Ukraine, and etc. And all this adds to protesters' concerns of looming global recession resulting from Donald Trump's aggressive global tariffs regime. And we'll discuss these anti-Trump rallies in your spotlight program. And now for this package.
But every point in tariffs is worth more.
President Donald Trump's second term has been marked by bold and controversial moves, from imposing tariffs on nearly all foreign trading partners, which he hails as an economic revolution, to intensifying deportation efforts that have sparked both praise and outrage. Trump's agenda has reshaped the nation's social and economic landscape. While some applaud these measures as necessary steps to protect American jobs and security, critics warn of rising consumer prices, economic uncertainty, and the human cost of aggressive immigration policies. The fallout has been global. On Saturday, protests erupted across the world, reaching a fever pitch. In Washington, D.C., tens of thousands gathered, joined by demonstrators in cities from New York to Los Angeles, and even as far as Paris and Berlin.
I think
it's important to speak up. I think silence is not an option. I think you have to stay engaged. You have to stay vigilant. I think it's not only for our community at large, but the world at large. I think that enough is enough.
The hands-off rallies, organized by over 150 groups, voiced opposition to government downsizing, trade policies, and what many see as an erosion of civil liberties. The message was clear. Resistance to Trump's policies is mounting, and the world is watching. Many remarks focus on the role played in Trump's administration by wealthy donors, most notably Elon Musk, who has served as an advisor to the president and has been playing a key role in government downsizing.
They would have our people believe that the reasons we can't afford rent, the reason we can't afford health care, the reason we can't afford groceries is because of other people in our own communities. Yes, we know that this system is rigged and the status quo doesn't work for Americans, but it's not rigged against the billionaires, it's rigged for the billionaires and for the corporations.
Adding to the tension, recent polls show approval ratings for President Trump slightly slipping. As the dust settles on a night of unprecedented demonstrations, one question looms large. What lies ahead for Trump's presidency? Will the anger towards his policies subside, or will they ignite further division and unrest? Only time will tell.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now for our guests. Joining us is Mr. John Stepling, author and commentator out of Inderøy, Norway. And Mr. Daniel Patrick Welch, political commentator, joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the broadcast here. Thank you for your patience while you ran that report for our viewers. John, I guess we'll start with you in Inderøy, Norway. Good to have you, bud. Your initial thoughts on why do you think the world is mobilizing the way we're witnessing against the Trump administration?
I think that this is what happens when 40 years ago you pulled the plug on public education, and you have an extraordinarily misinformed and politically ignorant population. Not to say that Trump doesn't warrant protest, but of course so did Joe Biden and so did Obama and so did every president back to Reagan, certainly. And I think that part of this is this is liberal America wringing their hands in outrage at things that they perceive as dangerous. I saw no protest signs about the bombing of civilians in Yemen, for example, not one. Very little protest about Israeli policy and the abetting and support for a genocide in Gaza. I'm not seeing any protests about that. In fact, I saw signs at some protests, hands off NATO. You despair at the kind of hopeless stupidity of much of this. But this is the U.S., which has been in sharp decline for at least a decade, longer than that. The transference of wealth to the top 1% happened under Obama. The living conditions, the quality of life has continued to deteriorate over the last 20 years, and really much longer than that. But certainly, I think you can say since Reagan, we have seen a steady decline in job security, quality of life. We've seen a mental health crisis, a crisis of obesity. People are miserable and unhappy, and they also take offense at Trump's style, and there's been a lot of, and understandably so. He talks like a mafia don, and he is insulting to people, and he's crude and vulgar and obviously uneducated, and he has this team of techno bot guys who are equally offensive, I think, to the general public. J.D. Vance has a really questionable bedside manner, I have to say. And so people are offended, but they're getting desperate. And it almost wouldn't matter who was president. If it was Kamala Harris, people would be just as desperate because the system is failing. And that's the message here. It's really failing. And the infrastructure is crumbling. And there are no answers, and there are no jobs, and there's no hope for anybody right now. That's the overriding reality.
Thank you there. And Daniel, thanks for your patience there. Welcome to our Spotlight program there, pal. Daniel, many people in London are holding up signs, no to MAGA hate, dump Trump, resist the tyrant, save democracy. What do you think about Donald Trump and his policies getting people motivated to this level of mobilization, or to John's point, do you feel he's just been a scapegoat for a declining living standard over a generation now in America and abroad?
Well, I can't, the hair raises on the back of my neck at labeling Trump a scapegoat of anything. So I was bummed that John got to go first. I love John, I admire, he's a great writer. But, I figured he'd steal all my lines. Yeah, I am a veteran of these marches. I've been doing it since I was five, going to to counter an anti-busing march in South Boston in 1970. You know, it is important for people to be on the streets. But John is absolutely right. They're angry. They would be angry if Carmel, whatever, was president, but they wouldn't be in the streets because it wouldn't be organized by the party out of power. This looks to me depressingly and sadly like a color revolution, what the CIA has organized in country after country for the last 80 years, all having signs in the same fonts, although they don't need this because, you know, Bernays has taught them to meld people's minds in such a way that they come up with these self-thought things like the picture of Putin's puppets, Musk, Trump, and Vance, right? I mean, this is stupidity gone off the rails. And what do they want? They, meaning the billionaire class's puppets who set this up, the other faction of the oligarchy. This is not, you know, billionaires shouldn't be running our government, but they have been forever. And this is just different billionaires. And so now what they're trying to get is back in power without changing anything serious. Get back the reins of power. That's what this is about. That's why you see hands off Ukraine. I mean, we're talking about World War III. We're talking about arming Diego Rivera Diego Garcia to the teeth so that the Americans can attack Iran. Like, there's crazy stuff going on that's a continuity of long-held American foreign policy that threatens actually the world, not just people on Social Security in the United States. And these are completely ignored. I agree completely. No signs that I didn't roll my eyes at, quite frankly.
And you know what? I feel like we're going to get off on a tangent, but because it's a good tangent, it's pretty credible where you guys are taking this conversation. I'm going to stick with this. John, I want you to elaborate on what Daniel said about a color revolution organized type of thing by the intelligence we've seen over the decades, because this is a good point that we should probably dwell into. The fact that the Democratic Party is the one pushing this hands-off movement, and 1,200 demonstration sites over 50 U.S. states, and now they've obviously exported these to Europe and elsewhere. And it's so funny when we get into it, because all the Democratic pushback when Trump was in his first term, when Biden got in, and you guys both of you very well remember, he changed nothing. Not when it came to immigration, to everything the Democrats, especially Biden, lambasted Trump about and said that it's beyond inhumane. It's beyond. I mean, he used every word to demonize Trump and his policies. And guess what he did? Well, all we saw was nothing more than continuity. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, well, American foreign policy never changes, and your other guest is right, and I'm a big fan of him as well. Actually, there were no signs that I didn't roll my eyes at. I mean, just idiots that Trump was a communist agent, a Putin stooge, that you know he was somehow bringing world communism to America. This is just, it is mind-numbingly stupid stuff, and you do wonder about it. I don't want to think my fellow Americans have sunk into this level of ignorance, but I fear they have. Is this a psyop of some sort? Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. There's always agent provocateurs. There's always, when it's organized at this level, one does start to question things. And look, Biden was the worst president in history, and there were no protests. Biden gave his son a pardon after obvious criminal misconduct of a pretty serious kind. He's just pardoned. We had COVID under Biden. We had all kinds of foreign policy crimes under Biden. His treatment of Israel was very much the same. The foreign policy rhetoric was the same. It's the same defense contractors in office and in that revolving door at the Pentagon, CIA, State Department. It's all the same people. What Trump brings out is a certain outrage because people dislike his style. I really think that a lot of it is he's just offensive to the sensibilities of people. But also we have reached a point where the standards of living in the U.S. have deteriorated hugely. There's no work. There's no optimism about a future in which there will be work. And, you know, you have people like Elon Musk talking about universal basic income and, colonies on Mars and stuff. Yeah, I get that it starts to become disturbing because it's cloud cuckoo land. And the reality, however, is when you have people supporting American imperialism and all these protests continue to, defend American imperialism, the wars in Gaza, 20 years in Afghanistan, on and on and on and on, 900 military bases around the world, and now Netanyahu is going to visit to push for a war against Iran. This never changes. So why are these people out on the streets right now? Maybe it's just economic. They fear the coming depression. But it feels a little suspicious. I agree with your other guest to that degree. The level of organization is surprising, let's say.
And the contradictions we see in Donald Trump, the character Daniel, he's pushing himself off as this anti-war guy, yet he continues to fuel Israel's genocide in Gaza. He was actually a big part of the fact that the ceasefire in Gaza broke down, and hinting using force against Iran, against Panama, Greenland, against Mexico for all the fentanyl coming into the States. Is this self-proclaimed anti-war Donald Trump who he is, or is he just part of what he refers to himself as the deep state, but he doesn't realize it?
Well, I hate the term deep state because it's just the state. That's what it is. It's the state. It's the system. It's the ruling class. You know, Marx said, it's like there's an old meme of the Illuminati. And it says, you mean ruling class, bro. There's a picture of Marx with a glass of wine or something. I don't know. Just, I mean, the thing is that, yes, he represents the billionaire class. There's no question about that. The thing about being an anti-war person is absurd and ridiculous. You can't say that. All that he ever actually said himself was that these wars were a waste of money and they were the wrong thing to do. I mean, he's very clearly looking to save money in Ukraine, to spend money to fight China on Taiwan and Iran and Yemen and so on. So it is true that what John said again about style. This is a projection. He's a con man. He's a hustler. That's who he's always been. He's real estate, like a slumlord trying to make deals. You know, that doesn't have any depth to it. And that's the whole thing, is that you can't attack Trump the person. Not that I care about the guy, but it doesn't rise to the level of mass protest. People should be voicing their actual concerns, not stylistic ones. Because I can agree with both. I know a lot of people. You run into someone in the pub who says, I like Trump. He pisses off the wrong people. I mean, the right people, sorry. He pisses off all the right people. That's what, you know, that's a style thing. They like that kind of style. Then the liberals who say he's gross and he's ew and he's this, plus he's just so offensive to everyone with a human heart. But again, style over substance has become the only metric by which Americans can value candidates and policies, and they ignore the facts, which are U.S. hegemony is going on continuously and is in real trouble. I won't doubt that the things against Trump in Europe and elsewhere are things against U.S. policy for two generations, and they should continue. And they are becoming successful in some ways, but not in the American political voting public.
Right. At all. And John, if I could really, quickly get your take on the tariffs regime by Donald Trump, it seems to be irking everyone from New York to London. Tariffs on everyone, baseline of 10%, like a gratuity charge at a restaurant for practically everyone that you're trading with, additional tariff regimes ranging from 10 to 30%, from China to Mexico, from Canada, you very well know, to your American so-called, pardon, your European so-called allies there. So it's shocking. Every single market index, at least 5%, were shaken over the last couple of days. A lot of economists say that a global recession is imminent. How do you see Trump's global tariff war here, John? And is it going to benefit, ultimately, the American consumer? I guess that's the big thing. He's emphasizing, he's trying to do.
Ultimately, the American working class will suffer the most from this. And he doesn't care about that. The idea that somehow Trump is stumbling blindly and clumsily into a global depression is nonsense. That's what they want. Ever since COVID, there has been this kind of restructuring, global economic restructuring, a kind of contraction of capital. This will end up hurting the working class. They will be disciplined further. They will be subjected to further controls and restrictions in how they lead their lives. These marches are not about the things that they really should be about, obviously. All the way back to Reagan, you know, destroyed unions and crushed American labor, and that's really happening again. It may make Trump unpopular for a while, but he doesn't care because, you know, this is electoral theater in a way. The people who really run the country allow this theater to take place, and everybody gets up in arms about it and clutches their pearls and make, you know, takes place in marches like this. But America people should be concerned with the imperialist wars and global destruction that the U.S. and you know, now Israel, but the targeting of China, Russia, Iran, these are crazy imperialist adventures that the U.S. is less and less capable of prosecuting. The era of U.S. power, hegemonic power, is over, and so there is an undercurrent of desperation in all of this as well from the government side.
All right, we're just about out of time. Daniel, I wanted to give you more time. We have about a little less than a minute left. Trump's also, a lot of these protesters are also pushing back on Donald Trump's cabinet appointments, from Elon Musk to anti-vax Robert F. Kennedy to handle health and human services, to Tulsi Gabbard running national intelligence services, to Kash Patel heading the FBI. Good or bad for America, or to your earlier point, is he just doing this to tick people off?
He just doing this to concentrate his power and justify the election, winning the election. Again, that's the scam, just to win the election. What he's doing is what billionaires always do. Billionaires want to make more money for themselves. That's what the trade war is about, reshaping, pulling up the drawbridges so that America can be more of an autarky to get ready for this contraction. And they're late to the game. They are scared, and that despair is visible from below, and people are latching onto it for the wrong reasons.
Great talk, gentlemen. Appreciate having you both on. Stay safe to the both of you there. Don Stepling joining us there out of Inderøy, Norway, and also Daniel Patrick Welsh joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. And this brings us to end your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Washington Attorney General Nick Brown joined with Oregon in filing a lawsuit against President Donald Trump's effort to impose new election procedures on the states. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. The American newspaper, the Seattle Times, has covered the story and tells us more. Washington's Attorney General Nick Brown filed a lawsuit on Friday, 4th of April, against President Donald Trump's attempt to alter election procedures across the United States, challenging what he described as an unconstitutional and illegal attack on democracy. Washington teamed with Oregon to file the lawsuit, which is similar to the one filed on Thursday, 3rd of April, by California and 18 other states, according to Washington Attorney General Nick Brown. The legal actions are directed at an executive order by Donald Trump last week that calls for requiring people to provide documentary proof of citizenship when registering to vote, and for mail-in ballots to be received by elections office no later than Election Day. The Washington-Oregon lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in Seattle, Washington. Neither the Constitution nor any federal law gives the president the power to set rules for how states conduct elections, Nick Brown said during a news conference at his downtown Seattle office. Only the Constitution and congressional action can change how states handle voting, he said. The president has absolutely no authority to do what he's purporting to do, Nick Brown added. He was joined at the news conference by Washington Secretary of State Steve Hobbs and State Representative Charlotte Minna. Nick Brown added, "We will not let this attempt to assert control over our constitutional rights go unchecked. It is highly important that we fight these efforts and not become numb to tyranny." The Washington-Oregon lawsuit says Donald Trump's order violates multiple provisions of the Constitution, including the Elections Clause, saying the clause gives states primary authority to regulate the time, place, and manner of federal elections. The lawsuit says President Trump's order also violates multiple federal laws, including the National Voter Registration Act of 1993, which says people can attest to their U.S. citizenship when registering to vote. Reacting to the lawsuit filed by California and other states, White House spokesperson Harrison Fields defended President Trump's proof of citizenship order as common sense and called objections by Democratic leaders insane. The Trump administration is standing up for free, fair, and honest elections, Harrison Fields said. Trump's 25th of March executive order builds on his long-standing complaints about U.S. elections, including his false claims on widespread voter fraud and voting machine manipulation in his 2020 loss to Democrat Joe Biden. In his 2024 presidential campaign, Donald Trump claimed there would be rampant fraud, but he has been mostly quiet on that front since his victory. Nick Brown said Washington and Oregon decided to sue on their own rather than join Thursday's lawsuit, partly because the Pacific Northwest states have similar mail-in systems that could be uniquely affected by President Trump's agenda. Washington's voting system is already secure, fair, and particularly accessible, Hobbs said on Friday, 4th of April. Trump's election order, if carried through, could disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of voters here, especially older adults, low-income voters, and naturalized citizens, according to Washington's Secretary of State. Hobbs added, "Let's be clear, federal law already prohibits non-citizens from voting. Every voter in our state must attest to their citizenship, and we regularly maintain our voter rolls. Registering to vote in Washington, if you're not a citizen, is a felony, punishable by up to 5 years imprisonment. Registration requires a driver's license or state-issue ID card, and without either of those, one can register by using a Social Security number." Many states, including Washington and Oregon, accept ballots postmarked on or before Election Day, including when they are received in the mail after Election Day. The mail-in process has helped Washington achieve one of the country's best voter participation rates, according to Attorney General Nick Brown. Washington is now part of 11 lawsuits against the Trump administration, according to Nick Brown. Brown predicted that at this rate, there will be many more to come. The national broadcaster ABC News has also covered the same story. Washington and Oregon on Friday, 4th of April, became the latest states to ask a court to reject President Donald Trump's efforts to overhaul elections in the United States, just a day after Democratic officials in 19 other states filed a similar lawsuit. Washington Attorney General Nick Brown added, "Neither the Constitution nor any federal law gives the president authority to set rules for how states conduct elections." Nick Brown, a Democrat, speaking at a news conference in Seattle, said, "It is the states that decide how voters are registered. It is the states that decide how ballots are counted." Friday, 4th of April's lawsuit in U.S. District Court in Seattle is the fifth against the executive order since it was issued last week. The order includes new requirements that people provide documentary proof of citizenship when registering to vote, and a demand that all mail ballots be received by Election Day. It also puts states' federal funding at risk if election officials don't comply. That could disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of voters in the Pacific Northwest of the United States, where ballots must be postmarked but not necessarily received by Election Day. Washington Secretary of State Steve Hobbs noted at a news conference that more than 300,000 ballots in Washington arrived after Election Day last year. Steve Hobbs added, President Trump's executive order is nothing more than a blatant attempt to rig the system and suppress votes. Oregon's Attorney General Dan Rayfield, speaking at a news conference, said, Trump is trying to make it harder for people to vote. It's a direct assault on the Constitution and a brazen attempt to act like a king, dictating how states should run their elections. The lawsuits from the states follow earlier ones against the executive order by nonprofit voting groups and the Democratic National Committee, the DNC. They say the order could disenfranchise voters because millions of eligible voting age Americans do not have the proper documents readily available. People already are required to attest to being U.S. citizens under penalty of perjury in order to vote. The lawsuits have said Donald Trump's directive violates the Constitution, which specifies that states have the authority to set the times, places, and manner of elections. The U.S. Congress has the power to make or alter regulations for elections for president and Congress, but the Constitution doesn't mention any presidential authority over election administration. White House spokesperson Harrison Fields on Friday, 4th of April, called the proof of citizenship requirements common sense and said the administration is standing up for free, fair, and honest elections. President Trump has continued to claim that he won the 2020 election despite all evidence to the contrary. Courts of law have rejected dozens of his legal challenges, and his attorney general at the time said there was no sign of widespread voter fraud. Reviews, recounts, and audits in the battleground states where he contested his loss all confirmed that Democrat Joe Biden won the election. He and other Republicans also promoted the idea during last year's presidential election that large numbers of people who were not U.S. citizens actually voted. Voting by non-citizens is rare in the United States and, when caught, can lead to felony charges and even deportation. Washington Attorney General Nick Brown said it is hard to imagine a subject where this president has less credibility than he does with elections. Nick Brown cited Trump's lies about the 2020 presidential election and his loss to Joe Biden. He added, he's always looking to undermine faith in our democracy.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Israel's incessant air and artillery strikes kill more Palestinian women and children across Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocide. The heads of six UN agencies issue a grave warning on the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, calling for the immediate resumption of the ceasefire. And Iran's foreign minister rejects Trump's claim about direct talks between Tehran and Washington, stressing that negotiations in Oman will be high-level but indirect. Welcome to the program. Gaza is witnessing more deaths and destruction, and Israeli forces press ahead with their relentless air and artillery strikes across the blockaded territory. In one of the latest attacks, at least five Palestinians were killed and several others wounded after a residential building was bombed in Safina, northwest of Gaza City. In the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah, an Israeli airstrike targeted a Palestinian